6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris, at Light Force. Joined virtually, as always, by the kind of disappointed in me, but I can't get mad at her because it's all my fault, Anna Forsythe, 8-4-6-0-3. Welcome, Anna.
I think that's just my face. It expresses permanent disappointment with the world, but it's kind of just my face. Yeah, we've had a bit of delay tonight, and patrons will notice we didn't do an iota, but, you know, we got a... be a bit free and like move with the schedule and the times, and you have puppies and kittens and baby forces to take care of.
Yeah, it's been a day. I mean, nothing new to all the parents out there, but it's been a fun day with an unexpected kid at home, a puppy that's still being very much a puppy, and yeah, a cat who is just outright pissed that we brought a creature into the household and therefore is expressing so much disappointment with her her tenants.
Yeah, her tenants. I mean, from the pictures you posted, I know that doesn't tell the whole story, but I'm kind of impressed with how much they're kind of cuddling, sort of getting close to each other, considering it hasn't been that long.
Yeah, so, I mean, the cat tolerates the puppy. And tolerate is maybe a loose definition, but she could be a lot worse than she probably has been. Mm. And we're appreciative that she has chosen the, okay, I will try to tolerate this thing that you brought into my space. Now, there are times when they have themselves a wrestling match, and the cat has a significant weight advantage on the puppy, like, you know, Twilight or Cat.
Yeah, the puppy is small.
Yeah, and the puppy will always be small. Like, Skye will not be a big dog. And in fact, she won't be a big, small dog. I think it's good that the puppy is sort of got all this, you know, life in her right now. But she'll learn pretty quick that the cat is ultimately going to be the boss. And once she comes to this realization, then I think things will be good. But they are, like, the novelty is worn off. Like, they sort of have an agreement. Like, when it's sort of rest time, we can nap near each other on the couch and it's okay. Like, the cat doesn't completely blitz out of here when the dog's around. The problem is the dog often sees the cat's, oh my God, this is my playmate. I want to play. Let's play. And the cat's like, piss off, you wanker.
Can we say that? I think you've just earned us an E, but okay.
I don't know. Maybe. I'll slap an E on it.
Anyway, yeah, that was your C4 pop date for Curious Parties. I was curious, so.
Yeah.
Please keep sharing photos on socials and on Discord, because I'd love to see it.
Well, at least someone does. I mean, we love her and all, but, you know, I wonder if there's a service where you can have like a puppy during like the good times and then hand them off to someone else who takes care of the bad times, but trains them and then gives them back to you fully, you know, trained.
Chris, a puppy is for life, not just for Christmas or the long weekend or whenever you go.
I know. This is part of the, you know, social contract we have with the puppy, but still, I am just simply expressing some feelings. I'm told that's healthy. Speaking of expressing feelings, Canucks Twitter is having some fun over the last couple of weeks with some of the comments and changes and conversations that have taken place. And, you know, we'll probably get into some of that here.
Yeah. I mean, we have to amuse ourselves, both Canucks Twitter and we on the podcast have to amuse ourselves some way during the offseason.
And the NHL playoffs are still happening.
Yeah, that's another way to amuse ourselves.
Well, sure.
I mean, laughing at misfortune usually.
Yeah, exactly. And what have you. And then, I don't know. I mean, obviously nothing much else is new and exciting outside of the fact we're here. It's been 2 weeks and you know what, it's going to be another 2 weeks. So why don't we move things along and start talking about what's going on in the world of Vancouver Canucks. So the Vancouver Canucks, they announced today, we're recording obviously on our normal Monday time, and it goes live on Tuesday. So who knows, maybe even more changes will have occurred, but they've made some announcements. And then we'll sort of work backwards from here in the player development side of the business. I honestly don't know what the player development side of the organization was under Jim. Like, I know like Ryan Johnson was there.
Right.
I mean, in Utica and in Abbotsford, like that part, I, you know, clearly understood.
Yeah.
But then I wasn't sure. Was it like, did that fall into Weisbrod's space?
Well, I mean, that was the problem because no one was really sure what John Weisbrod did apart from say yes to Jim Benning. And that probably wasn't great for his self-esteem. I'm sure he felt a bit threatened by anyone kind of vaguely smart under him. So, yeah, I think it, let's be real, like most player development in most teams isn't a huge part of the organization. But yeah, it seemed like a bit vague, and it's part of the growth today is just solidifying some of the people that are already there in their roles.
Yeah, and adding a few complimentary pieces.
A few, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, if we look at the announcement today, it was made very clear Cammy Granato is ultimately the AGM in charge of player development. If we were to think in a form of a sort of hierarchy or a pyramid, she is at the top of said sort of spot within the organization. And then from there, you've got the special advisors to the general manager, Daniel and Henrik Sedin, who I presume sort of go through Cammy, but there's some dotted lines because when you're a special advisor, you sort of kind of fall into wherever.
Right. Yeah. And I was just saying that it is interesting that they've worded it as on and off the ice that the Twins are going to work with them. I think it kind of, as soon as they were agreed to work with the team again, it was going to be as culture setters, not just as sort of player development people.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, on and off the ice for both Vancouver as well as Abbotsford. And, you know, so what I read from that, it's not to suggest the two won't necessarily travel, but they're just going to be focused based out of here on those two franchises, probably working with some of the younger players, although let's be honest, the Steens aren't old, but they're still older than probably most on either roster. I think it was Bruff that had said it? I can't remember. Someone on Twitter had made a comment where like Daniel and Henrik, because they're going to be the culture setters as to how to be a pro and how to perform sort of on and off the ice, is like, Bruce would go and ask, okay, so what should we do next? And the Hasidians are like, the grouse grind.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It is kind of like an impossible bar to set, but I mean, look at our captain Bo Horvat. He was taught to be a pro by the Twins, and that's what he is. So,
yeah. And I, you know, just to specifically speak to the Twins for just a few more seconds, you know, they've made it very clear that they've continued to focus on getting to know the business, the operations, and everything. Like they're almost like soaking every sort of aspect in. And I kind of feel that this is just sort of a step along the journey to eventually take over in some way, shape, or form. Hopefully here.
I mean, yes, we hope so. But yeah, it's kind of nice to see, and I made this comment in Discord today, but like, so the other roles, people brought in new to the organization, was Samuelson.
Mikhail Samuelson.
Yes, and Mike Komisarek. And something I thought was great, and it's kind of been shown through the Twins as well, that it's not just taking people that are good hockey players, being like, oh, they must know how to coach, they must know how to develop players, but like taping people with some experience in the Twins kind of launched straight into it with Vancouver, but they've been in Abbotsford learning the ropes. And I don't think it's a case of like, I think it would have been such a mistake to thrust Henrik and Daniel into really senior roles straight away.
Yeah. And, you know, with Mikael Samuelsson, Mike Komisarek coming in, both have received, you know, quite a number of accolades as to how they've approached the game after the game. And it's more than just putting their time in. It's actually being a student of the game and also a student of the operations and how teams are run. So this is good. Like, we're seeing a significant investment into a space that arguably may have received some investment in the past. It's just difficult to sort of point to and say, aha, that's it. And I think we would be remiss not to mention that, you know, Ryan Johnson, he's still there. He's in charge as the GM in Abbotsford. He's also the senior director of player development. And then Chris Higgins remains with the team as the assistant director of player development. So there's, you know, still some existing structure. You have Daniel and Henrik getting more involved, and you have the additions of Mikael and Mike coming into play. Is it Mikael or Michael? I always thought it was Mikael.
I think it's Mikael, but I don't think I've had his first name been said in quite a while.
The two Mikes.
Yeah.
No?
I don't know.
Maybe?
Do you think he's he'd be Sammy, though? I don't like that.
Maybe. I mean, that's how we...
the hockey thing goes. But yeah, I don't know if that would... Maybe he wants to be something more sensible now that he's a coach.
Now, some other changes that happened were actually behind the bench. And there was some curiosity. So once Bruce was brought back, you know, what was going to happen with the assistants or alternates, or essentially if you had coach in your name, would you be returning? And so what we now know is that assistant coaches, Brad Shaw and Jason King, they're coming back. However, Scott Walker, Kyle Gustafson, and video coach Daryl Seward are not. Now, the one that obviously raised an eyebrow or two was Scott Walker, because the presumption was that Scott came with Bruce being sort of his guy. In fact, the story goes, Bruce said to Scott Walker, hey, if I get another gig, I want you to come. And when the Canucks essentially reached out to Bruce, and Bruce just gave Scott a call, we're going to Vancouver, get on a plane. Like, and I think Scott was saying he wasn't even under contract until like 4 or 5 days into his tenure with the team. But apparently, he'd shared how he really wasn't as committed to Vancouver if he wasn't going to get the extension. His family still back east, didn't want to be away from them. And, you know, that made a lot of sense. But something else that came out was his belief that analytics just ain't it. And the Canucks are definitely saying analytics are going to be something more to be relied upon, not the end all or be all. And please don't think anyone out there who tells you that the analytics are the end all or be all or it, because they're not. But Scott was maybe like, no, not for me.
That's the thing. Analytics people don't tend to say that. They never say that. They say that analytics and eye test is a mix, and it's only eye test people that thinks that analytics don't come in. I said it.
That's so woke of you.
Yes. I mean, very quick sidebar, but very quick off the rails. I'm reading a book written, it's basically about racism in sport, and it's written by a cricket broadcaster, and he's in his like 60s or 70s, and you know, he's saying like, he looks woke up in the dictionary, and he's just like, why is it so bad to be aware of social injustice? And yeah, I'm definitely
so okay, we're off the rails here. I was actually thinking about the term today, like what made this word negative in a sense.
I mean, like, right-wing people just saying like social justice warriors, and it's like, okay, so it's bad to fight for social justice.
Well, and I simplify the term of the word, but to me it's simply aware. Yeah. Why is being aware bad? I'd like to be more aware of many things in my life. I'd like to be more aware of how many times I put my foot in my mouth when I'm saying something that someone else is interpreting differently. I want to be self-aware in that sense. Like, is that a bad thing?
No.
And I mean, 100%. Often, no, but like, I find that then those who might suggest that awareness is just, you know, a wokeism, because, you know, let's use this term in a pejorative fashion. will then say, I just say what I say, and people need to live with that. It goes down a downhill real fast from there.
Anyway,
speaking of, you know, I live, you know, life my way, as it pertains to analytics, Scott Walker, like he,
so, and like, honestly, like he's had a pretty crap year, like getting a puck to the head, suffering vertigo. Like, it's not like the best.
No, no, I'm not.
Season behind the bench. Like, and he wants to go back home. He seems like he's kind of feeling like that he's going to be done with the game, which is, again, fair enough. And honestly, I kind of respect it. If he's like, okay, the organization is going one way, that the game as a whole is going one way, I'm not ready to get on board with that. I'd rather just like chill and play golf. Like,
yeah. Well, and I and for me, like he could, yeah, I'm just, you know, I don't want to be away from my family, and Canucks wouldn't commit. Yeah, no problem, man. That, it, like, family number one, like everything that you've described, totally on board. In fact, he can not be on board with sort of analytics and the Vancouver Canucks going in a different direction. Perfectly fine with his reasoning, because it's his reasoning. It's entirely his choice in that regard. I just feel that him making this comment simply adds fuel to the analytics are bad bus.
But and, doesn't it show that, like, how Bruce is moving with the times? Because he's kind of more known as an old school coach. And when he came in, he said he's not against analytics, which, you know, read between the lines, he's not really for them either. But I think Canucks are so much embracing that, that he's kind of gone, okay, this is the way the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
Better get on board. So I think it's, yeah, it's kind of a good thing. The guy that's anti-analytics is out, and the guy that's, you know, willing to change his mind about it
is still there. Do you think Bruce is willing to change his mind?
I think he's willing to embrace it for the job. Like, he may not ever change his mind, but that's okay.
No, I guess maybe, like, there is a thought that I have that he's going into a final year of a contract. He wants to showcase his ability as a coach. Like, he doesn't seem to have sort of dropped the, hey, I'm, you know, getting on in the years, I'm going to take some time away. Like, he wants to coach. And if it's not going to be in Vancouver, this might be an opportunity for him to showcase himself to other teams who might be in need of a coach at some point later on. Like, so let's say the right things. I don't know. And I'm not in the room shooting it with him. Maybe we should spend some money on Cameo and get him to tell us his thoughts.
I honestly think, like, you could be right, but if that's the worst case scenario, bring it on. Like,
yeah,
for Bruce to, like, show, like, coach to the best of his ability whilst embracing analytics, even if it's just for show, like, that's totally fine by me.
Yeah. Ian Clark also back. I would be actually have been more upset if Ian Clark wasn't back, like, out of all the coaches. Oh,
yeah. I think he is the most important. Yeah, like, as far as everyone else, like, I mean, Gustafsson was new, so I didn't really, like, have much of an opinion on him. Like, Seward, like, they both seem to be doing a decent-ish job, especially as, like, they were calling the shots in terms of reviews and stuff, which Canucks actually have a pretty good record on. But yeah, I think Brad Shaw is a really good addition, and he's been a good change. Jason King, I'm not the biggest fan of, but they seem to work well together, that team, so I'm not mad about it.
Yeah. These changes had actually occurred, I think, the day we recorded our last episode, but the essentially the training staff of the Vancouver Canucks were all let go. The I think it's like health and not health and safety, but human performance staff. Is that the term?
Sure, athletic staff. I don't know what you would call them. But yeah, Dave Zahn, Roger Takashi. I'm forgetting one more other person. But yeah, I think it's kind of clear that the Canucks have some concerns about injuries and how they've been handled in the past. So, which is, yeah, I mean, they've been there for such a long time that they can't have been all bad, but, like, maybe that's change is as good as anything.
Yeah, so it was Roger Takahashi, John Sanderson.
John Sanderson.
And the interesting thing is if you go to Canucks.com right now, they all still have pictures up. Like they're still listed as the human performance team. But then when you go to the coaching staff, the coaching staff's pretty darn thin, right? So it's interesting.
Yeah. Obviously, like, Canucks are just, like, moving forward, changing, like, their focus to be analytics heavy, for one, and make some, yeah. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with, like, a different outlook on training and injuries and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Onward the, and upwards.
The maybe. Thing that, you know, was made interesting about this is that in recent years, the Vancouver Canucks have actually not done too poorly when it comes to player health, player performance. They've been actually middle of the pack. And I think it was Patrick had had a conversation with Patrick Olveen, so PJ, Patrick Johnston, and he had sort of brought up this fact because Patrick Olveen has said, oh yeah, no, we haven't been happy with, you know, injuries, Vancouver Canucks, mm-hmm. you know, suffered, blah, blah, blah. We're just looking to make some, you know, it's new people, new philosophy, new changes. I mean, they're great in their job. It was just an opportunity to do it. And then when PJ sort of, well, you know, they're not as bad as you sort of pointed out, and here's the data, Olveen was like, eh, well, you know, change.
Right. And that's the kind of thing. I think that it's more about taking it in a new direction than the old direction necessarily being bad. But it's almost like remodeling the house to all be one style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they've done really good jobs with the organization as a whole. But yeah, clearly they want to change things up.
Yeah. As I'm looking at the staff here, there's an Aquilini on the training staff.
What's his first name?
It's Christian Aquilini. He's a dressing room attendant.
Yeah, I think I know who that is.
I would presume there's a few Aquilinis.
There really are.
Maybe related to within the entire umbrella of what is known as the Aquilini Investment Group and subsidiaries. But
oh yeah, I don't know that guy, but I have noticed him. There's someone else who I think is in, like, maybe scouting, and I'm not sure he does a lot of scouting. I think he's just Aquilini's cousin or something that kicks around.
Hmm. Off the rails, one of the other dressing room attendants, John Jukic, you often see him behind the bench on the opposing team. I used to referee soccer with him regularly. He's a really good guy.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. The last bit of Vancouver Canucks news, which sort of as to changes that we know of for certain, Linus Karlsson got himself a deal. Probably if we think about players that needed a contract to ensure they remain Vancouver Canuck, that was the one player that I think anyone might have had any concern about. But yeah, deal's done. Contract signed.
Yeah. We mentioned it very briefly at the end of our last episode about the 1st of June deadline. And yeah, Linus Karlsson, league best rookie. So yeah, I think he'll be a really good addition for one of the Canucks. Most likely Abbotsford to start with. I think adjusting to the North American game is not to be underestimated, so... Yeah, that's good news.
But, you know, beyond that, not much else sort of going on, at least confirmed with Vancouver Canucks. Obviously, we are getting closer to a potential offseason, a draft, a free agent frenzy. I would like to think if the Vancouver Canucks were looking to make moves, they would be putting the pieces together to make said move the moment they possibly could.
I mean, we don't know what's going on in the background, so we're hoping lots.
What? You don't know?
I don't know. I'm hoping they're up to stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. In fairness.
Behind the curtain, et cetera.
Yeah. But before we bounce into a few other topics we wanted to hit on this show, that Battle of Alberta that I said was going to be a whole lot of fun. The first game was a whole lot of fun.
I mean, that was amazing.
I don't think anyone could have predicted a game like the first game was. And then, I don't know, was Calgary that bad? Like, was Calgary, like, you know, riding on a wave that was eventually just going to, you know, peter out? Are the Oilers that good? Is Connor McPlayoff?
Connor McPlayoff.
You know, the difference maker here. Like, I'm sorry, Mike Smith isn't a horrible goaltender, but Mike Smith is the goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers.
Honestly, he almost got caught out so many times. If anyone could have looked at that series and said, you know, like, which goaltender is going to perform, I think 99 people out of 100 would have bet on Jacob Markstrom. And Mike Smith, yeah, again, he wasn't horrible, but he wasn't like.
Well, I mean, Markstrom, his save percentage was in the 800s. Now, and that's just like let's say you take what happened in game one out of the picture here. It's still in the 800s.
Yeah, he really didn't do himself justice. This past series is disappointing to see. I mean, honestly, like, he did well against Dallas, too, but, like, Jake Ottinger was definitely the star of that series, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shame for them. Yeah, but obviously it's a big box office draw to get two of the league's biggest stars playing against each other in a conference final, so.
Sure. And that, you know, I can totally see why there is some desire, if any, to have an Avalanche versus Oilers.
And let's be honest, like, watching Colorado play is awesome.
Oh yeah, no, I think so. Like, I ultimately, you know, I'm not going to be so confident to say that the Oil are going to get run over, but I think it's fair to say that whomever came out of Alberta was hard pressed to beat the Avalanche.
Yeah, I'm still betting on them to win the cup, not literally, because I did not do that, but. Yes, I still think it's their cup to lose. Obviously, there's Tampa, and Tampa have experience, and Tampa know how to win playoff games. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and as we saw, Tampa got through Florida without too much difficulty, which that shocked me more than the Oilers walking over the Flames.
Same. I mean, I had Florida to make the final. But yeah, they just stopped being able to score.
I hear scoring's important.
Yeah. I thought you were going to make a joke there about not being able, like, you can't score in a strip club, you can't score on the ice, something like that. It's a DIY joke. The pieces are there, you just have to assemble it.
Put it together? Okay.
Like the Florida Panthers couldn't. Yeah, that was a disappointing series, honestly. I felt a bit deflated, not least because, you know, Braden Point didn't play in it. Vasilevsky was good, but, like, he didn't need to be Vasilevsky, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a disappointing series. But you know what? Like, Florida Panthers could use a point-a-game player who is also good in the playoffs, because yeah. We have a lightly used JT Miller for you.
The other series that, you know, just... like, as we were recording, wrapped up, the New York Rangers beat the Carolina Hurricanes in 7. Sucks to be the Canes, but...
if you can't win at home, like, you can't win a cup. Like, that's... sorry, you can't win on the road if you can only win at home. Like...
what happens if you do win at home, but you lose one at home? A Vancouver Canucks team would like to talk to you about that.
Yeah. I mean, we've already had Rob Williams make that connection tonight, which I did not need to hear. But yeah, Carolina, another disappointing team. It's not as big a disappointment as Florida maybe, but I definitely expected them to beat New York.
Yeah. And you have to give credit to New York. You know, they're not a poor team by any way, shape, or form, and they are playing hot. Like, yes, they were the better seed going against the Penguins, but I don't think anyone really gave that series to New York. And they go seven. They get up against the Canes, and again, they're now a little lower seed, but arguably the Canes on paper should be the better team. Goes to seven. They get through. Now they have to go up against the Lightning. I think New York is going to bring an entertaining series to Tampa. But again, it's kind of like us talking about whomever's playing the Avs. Do you really see a team beating Tampa at this point? And I don't. At this point, maybe New York. But I still don't see New York.
No. I mean, I think we're looking at a Tampa-Colorado final for sure. Yeah. But yeah, it is interesting. Obviously, Carolina, not just they were disappointing overall, but yes, they are now, as of game seven, they were on their third choice goalie. So when you're up against, you know, a team that has Shesterkin behind them, and I actually heard... I don't know if Ray Ferraro, I don't think he was offering this as his opinion. I think he was more just stating that he had heard it, but like about relitigating the draft and would you take Shesterkin over Vasilevsky, which in my mind is kind of insane. And that's not a knock in Shesterkin at all, who I think has had an awesome season. But yeah, Vasilevsky is Vasilevsky and he has two cups on the bounce. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the box score of that first Calgary Edmonton game right now.
So, yeah, I was in the movies and I came out and I saw the score and I was like, okay, I'm hustling home. I have like, I came out during the second intermission. So I was like, oh, I have time. I can get home, watch it. And I literally missed a minute of like the third period and I missed two or three goals. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like just to relive it here on the podcast, within the first minute of the game, like we haven't even got to 60 seconds in, the Calgary Flames are already up 2-0. And then not even the midway point of the first, they're now up 3-0. Okay, Connor McPlayoff scores a goal a minute or so after that. But Calgary is setting the tone. They're in their barn. The Saddle Dome is wild. Like they're pumping those like flame pyros, you know, as much as they possibly can. Second period starts, and within the first minute, Coleman scores a goal, and then he follows it up 5 minutes later with another. So, okay, 5-1. It's in the bag, right? Oh, Bouchard scores one a minute after that. Just over a minute later, Tkachuk scores one. Then Zach Hyman decides he needs to pot a couple more within a minute, or one within a minute, a few after that. Draisaitl scores, and you've got yourselves a one-goal game going into the third period.
It was madness. I actually, today, I was listening to an older episode of Sound of Hockey, and it was friends of the show, and it was them, like, just in the background every couple minutes, they would check the Calgary score and just be like, yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, and this is the thing. If you had not paid attention to this, we get into the third period, not just a minute and a half in, and guess what? Edmonton scores a goal to tie it up. It is currently, this is a playoff game, and not like a first-round playoff game. We're talking a second-round playoff game, and we currently have ourselves a 6-6 score. Calgary then scored three after that. But the point remains, what a wild game. Unfortunately for Calgary, they didn't realize they needed to save some of those goals for subsequent games, and that's all she wrote. Anywho, we're going to take ourselves just a quick break here. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast from CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
He liked to say the F word.
Well, then get the F here then. Okay, see ya.
Right off. Oh.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a explanation about it. I can't.
You out of hand.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Okay, I want to make it very clear here. Chris Tanev, he's my boy. He's always been my boy. I mean that in the proverbial sense, not the literal sense, just to make that very clear. But it was apparent to most that there was something up with Chris Tanev, especially as they were playing against the Oilers. But as is, you know, tradition in the NHL, when it comes to playoffs, the most you get out of a coach is that a player has a body injury, which is obviously better than the out of body injury kind.
Existential
but, injuries. Yeah, existential, right? So Rick Dhaliwal, I mean, everyone knows Rick, and if you don't, at Dhaliwal Sports, he's been in the Vancouver sports scene forever. If Rick tells you something, it pretty much means it's true. He tweets out, "What a gutsy performance by Chris Tanev, who played through a torn labrum, separated shoulder, and had a sprained neck. Surgery next week." Like, I get it. Hockey players are warriors, but what the actual F? How is this good? How is, like, I mean, each one of those injuries is brutal, but the sprained neck, and that's perfectly fine to allow a player to put themselves in that amount of harm's way. Like, who is going to stand up for a player? And before someone goes, says, "Chris, it's playoff hockey, they'll do anything for the cup." That's the problem. That's,
yeah, 100% the problem. I mean, we don't want to go too hard on Rick Dhaliwal, who, like, we love and respect, but yeah, like, it wasn't great seeing him call it a gutsy performance. Like, that's not something to be praised. But the more concerning thing is the whole narrative is the team doctor that let Chris Tanev go out and play, especially the neck injury. Like, that's so dangerous. Like, it's just so messed up that that's something to be admired. Like, and that Chris Tanev, like, thought he had to do that. And I'm sure that wasn't a conscious thing. He didn't think, "Oh, I better get out there because my team need me and I'm going to get in trouble if I don't, or my teammates are going to hate me." Like, I'm sure that wasn't going through his head, but the whole culture of hockey is just play, keep playing, no matter what. Otherwise you're weak. Because if you're saying you're strong by doing that, you're saying you're weak if you don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, there are probably some listening are like, "Well, no, team doctors will not put them in harm's way. I mean, there's too many legal ramifications." Well, the thing about this is that a doctor is not employed by the player. The doctor is employed by the team. And yes, you're right. They obviously will take a duty to care to ensure the player is not going to be put into a position where they will be guaranteed or, you know, in more cases than not, be put into a position of a severe injury. But you're not in any way, shape, or form healthy when something like your neck is at risk. And I mean, playoffs are not the issue here. If this was a regular season game, maybe he sits out of that. So if that's the case, or the doctors were to hold him out, why is it that playoff hockey means you just take off the actual safety pins to allow for this to potentially become a bigger issue? Like, it needs to be the same no matter what the circumstances happen to be. And if I'm Chris Tanev, being a competitor, what's Chris going to do? "I'm all right. I'm good to go. Put me in, coach." It is unfortunately the ethos of a competitive player.
Yeah.
And so you need those outside, without the emotional connection, making those decisions. And again, you might tell me, "Chris, that's what they are. That's what doctors do." Okay, fine. Well, you know, it's still part of the problem. It's not just hockey. You see this in football. I mean, almost any competitive sport, something like this will occur. But it seems the more physical the sport happens to be, the more it's applauded.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm going to say something really cold here, but if you look at it as a purely economic, from a purely economic outlook, it's not smart to go hell for leather and permanently damage your players, especially stars. But hockey's not very smart with that. Like, it's team first, and it's that culture first of, you know, play tough, like, keep going no matter what happens, and that's how stars, like, get serious injuries, and you're getting players who are not fined or suspended for gross hits. And that's why hockey is the fourth sport of the major sports and will be for a long time. So if you're looking at it from a very cold, calculating perspective, it's not smart to be like hockey is. But if you're just looking at it from a human perspective, it's horrible, like, as well. And it's all part of this toxic masculinity that we talk so much about.
I think realistically, you and I are going to continue bringing issues like this up probably for as long as this podcast is around. I mean, I don't think I'm being jaded when I say that. I mean, it sucks because I think we both want change to happen, but do you honestly see change happening in this league?
I think it's going to take a lot because it's just like tied into so many things, right? I wasn't even planning on talking about this, but, you know, the current CHL lawsuit that's just being settled right now, like, that is honestly part of the same thing. It's this idea of, like, it's misogyny. It's that being emotional or at all showing any sort of vulnerability is feminine and therefore weak and therefore not wanted. And it's so gross. And as like long as we keep tolerating it, letting people who are sort of inflicting this damage on the sport get away with it, like, I mean we've talked about it before, but Luke Prokop, openly gay prospect, he's gonna come into the NHL in a few years, and is the NHL ready? Like, when are we gonna get another guy coming out? Because I wouldn't want to in this environment. It's horrible, honestly. But it's kind of no good saying, oh, there's nothing we can do and there's nothing that will change. We've got to like keep hoping and trying for change.
Well, and I just want to make it very clear. I'm not like, that's why I say we're going to continue to bring this up. We'll continue to talk about it because we want the change to occur. But it's so frustrating to see this league so stuck. Like, and when someone were to say, oh, they're much better than they once were, I'm sorry, that bar was so low. Like,
yeah, the bar
was turning the lights on in the office was probably a good thing. And again, that doesn't make it any better. But, you know, back to my earlier point, Chris Tanev, yes, warrior, played through injury thick and thin. And he won't be the last one to do so. He is not the first. And so long as the league were to continue to place sort of an economic, you know, association to it. I mean, we saw the Vancouver Canucks under a regime who is wanting to get big and tough. That would be the player they'd want. And you know what? Maybe there's some value in how it affects the room. But is that what you want your team to be about?
And let's not like get it twisted here, because I think Chris Tanev does have an excellent character and he has very good leadership and he has taken players under his wing whilst he was in Vancouver, and I'm sure it's the same in Calgary, and sort of been that leadership figure, like almost like father figure to younger players. And that's admirable. And I also do think it's admirable to want to sacrifice for your team, but not at any cost. Like, I do think it's fine to say, oh, like, I have a small niggle. Like, if this was the regular season, I, like, might not play this game because, you know, it's on the road. We don't need it to win. And I think that's fine to be like, but we're in the playoff. We're in the final. I'm going to play. But it's just, it can't cross that line.
You know, and wouldn't it be something if a player were to say, you know, true leadership is knowing the extent of the limit and looking out for myself, my long-term health. Yeah, you know what? There is an impact here, but think longer term, bigger picture. Like, far too many hockey players find themselves in much worse predicament as they get older, where their bodies deteriorate. That is proven. And if you were to tell me that a Stanley Cup or the potential, because what did Chris Tanev do in this particular scenario? He punished himself, and the result was not a positive one. So that even reinforces what you did. There's no guarantee of any payout. But one thing that is assured is that that punishment will catch up.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I think there's a lot of good and potential in hockey. Like, when Derek Dorsett retired, not because he couldn't play another game, but if he kept playing more games, he didn't think he would be able to pick up his daughter. He didn't think that he would have a long-term life outside of hockey. And I think everyone admired that step. And I think if you do make those courageous decisions, people will understand and embrace that. And of course, there'll be lots of people on Twitter that would not, but...
If Derek Dorsett makes that decision during the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean,
right, but that's the only, like, and this is the thing, is if he makes a decision during the playoffs, there is a fair number of people will be like, I can't believe he did that. It's playoff hockey.
You're not wrong, but we can't, like, we won't make any progress if we live our lives by keyboard warriors.
Yeah, no, but I mean.
No, you're right. You're right to say it.
There's no difference, but there are so many people out there whose tune would change because playoff hockey isn't involved. Anywho, we'll take ourselves another quick break, bring ourselves down a snidge before we get into half full, half empty.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I mean, we've talked about contracts for both JT Miller and Bo Horvat probably since, I don't know, 2016?
Yeah.
Actually, was JT and Miller a Canuck in 2016? I don't remember. No. I have to go back in time. I mean, I'm trying to use hyperbole, is that a word? Hyperbole to stress how often we talk about this. Matt's not even on this show anymore, and we're still bringing up the same topic over and over again. Well, guess what? There's things. I don't think it's any surprise that the Vancouver Canucks are trying to get JT Miller re-upped. Whether we agree with it or not, the Vancouver Canucks would like to talk a deal, get him back on the books, tie him up into a contract that makes sense from a cap perspective, from a team perspective. But they're also wanting to obviously keep their captain around. And what's interesting about this is that as the conversation has sort of gone on, the JT Miller camp has been pretty sort of firm. Well, no, here's what JT's worth. Yeah, we know things and you got a tough decision to make, but hey, this is what JT's worth. And, you know, it's now come out quite clearly that the team is a whole lot closer to re-signing Bo Horvat than they are at getting JT Miller onto an extension. Thoughts?
I mean, my thoughts are JT Miller is a very valuable player, and the only reason he's under a valuable contract is Jim Benning didn't sign him to it as Steve Yzerman did, who's a much smarter guy, clearly, with a lot of vision. But yeah, why would you sign a team-friendly deal if you're JT Miller? I don't think the Canucks are close, and you can believe in your teammates, but I'm sure his agent is saying, let's be realistic here. Mm-hmm. JT, like, the Canucks are at least 3 years away. So cash in now. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, I'm sure he loves playing here. I'm sure he'd love to stay, but why would you do it at a team-friendly price? Like, you just had a brilliant season.
Well, I mean, I saw a few comments on Twitter trying to compare JT Miller taking a team-friendly contract to akin to Ryan Kessler taking a team-friendly deal back in the late, 2000, early 2010s. And the thing about this is that team back then was very clearly not only a contender for playoffs, but contender for a actual trophy. This team, you know what? You can debate if you want that they're a contender as a playoff team. Like, I don't think that that's too much of a stretch. But
I mean, they bet they didn't make the playoffs, right? Like, how can you be a contender without getting in?
Well, a contender to the playoffs, not a contender into the playoffs. But, you know, why your point? Why would you take a discount when there's no guarantee that really all you're getting an opportunity to do is play with this team? Guys you've played a few years with in a city that you may like or may not like. Again, I don't know any of this. Or alternatively, take yourself an opportunity to get to the market and see what it's like. Like, is it possible that there's a team out there who's a lot closer than the Vancouver Canucks are and has the opportunity to spend some cash? And who knows? Maybe in not signing that deal, the Vancouver Canucks don't do things that you're interested in, or maybe do, but then you can in turn leverage that. Like, the ball is completely in JT Miller's court. And if I were him, I'm holding on to him until the shot clock hits zero.
I mean, I think it's a win-win situation for him, right? Because either Canucks like sign him to such a good deal that he agrees not to hit the market. He plays a couple of years in Vancouver, and if he continues to prove himself, then he can go to another team that's a contender. And more likely scenario, which is, again, what I would do if I'm agreeing with you here, like hit the market, see who's willing to pay you. And again, if you end up back at the Canucks, it's going to be at a very good price. So.
You know, Trev Goldie just dropped into Discord earlier tonight, and he had said that he saw three options. Option number one, trade Miller for picks, prospects, etc. Option number two, sign a point per game player. Option number three, lose him to free agency. I would suggest that what Trev Goldie has listed are the order of preference.
Right.
But there is no way the Vancouver Canucks can lose him in FA. Like, if they don't get it, they don't get him re-upped going into the trade deadline, you get something.
Yeah. I mean,
like that has to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, interestingly, I think a couple of Vancouver media, I mean, New York has been considered a potential landing spot for JT. And I mean, really depends what happens, but when they get swept by Tampa or get knocked out by Tampa, which is a likely scenario, do they not see it as we are so close to getting there? We're closer than we thought, like closer than other people thought, JT. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we would gladly take Philip Hedel off their hands if that's what they wanted.
Well, do you recall me posting a wild and crazy trade proposal in C4 Discord about JT Miller?
Who did you...
I said, find someone to take OEL, offer them JT Miller for future considerations.
I mean, that's the dream.
And so, I mean, Jay, he chimes in, he's like, that's a pretty good deal. And I, you know, one might suggest Jay's trying to stir the pot, but like, you think that through, I'm not trading JT Miller for future considerations. I am actually trading OEL's contract to a team who get JT Miller, and the future considerations is simply, you know, maybe it's contingent. Like if it's, you know, if they re-up JT Miller or something like that. Because all we're doing is you're trading the rights to the player. They can have the conversation. But the benefit there, the Vancouver Canucks suddenly have $12 million in cap space.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before, but the opportunity cost that we lost by trading for OEL, by signing Tyler Myers and like weighty contracts like that is huge. Like it really costs you ability to sign interesting free agents, trade for like some good like roster players. But yeah, I mean, I think it would be huge to get a contract like OEL off the books. And honestly,
That's what it would take to get it off the books.
Yeah, I mean, but like we talked about win-win for JT Miller. Could it not just be a win-win for both? Like, sure, you lose a point per game player, but you cash in on this player that you saw the potential in and you signed, you traded for, and now he has had a great season. You know, cash in on that. Then it could be win-win for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Everyone wins. Except for those who then would look at the Vancouver Canucks and say, I can't believe they blew up a contender like that.
That's exactly it. That's, it's paying it forward for their contention in the future.
You know, if this regime, I mean, I'm not suggesting they pull off that type of trade. That type of trade wouldn't happen. That type of trade would be so freaking progressive. It would be too progressive for most out there. I mean, I don't know many that would see that like, oh, yeah, no, I totally see what's going on here. They'd be like, holy crap, people got pissed off at Jim Benning. Here you have Patrick Alvin just giving players away. But the Vancouver Canucks need to figure out their cap. Like, I mean, I'm not going to be the most meticulous, you know, numbers guy here. But, you know, as we start looking ahead, I mean, if let's say JT Miller does come back, and if it's not a team-friendly deal and they fold and they sign him, we already know that in most cases Brock Besser's gone. But 2 years from now, what are we going to pay Petey?
Yeah.
Like,
with what?
Right? Like, and someone will then say, oh, no, there are a bunch of deals that'll be off the books and all that jazz. Yeah, true. And maybe they'll have uncovered some gems to sort of, you know, fill into the opportunity that once existed that the Vancouver Canucks had cap space, a young core. They could have made hay with that. They didn't. Maybe that happens again. But working with what it is we know.
Yeah, especially as, you know, we had Quinn and Petey on ELTs at the same time. And, you know, woof. Like, not much to show for that. So, yeah. I don't know. I just think there'd be so much wrong that even, like, a low estimate at a JT Miller deal hurts the Canucks. Because he's not going to be good when the Canucks are good. He's going to be good for another couple years, maybe 3 years. But are the Canucks going to be ready within 3 years? I don't know. I just doubt it.
Oh, I mean, if they were ready in 3 years, a lot would have to suddenly happen.
Yeah, like, I think 3 years is like a, again, like a optimistic estimate for their window to start.
Like they'd have to, Alvin would have to fleece a team or two. And you know, the odds of that happening are slim. Like, I mean, I think back to the, you know, the Gillis era. You know, Gillis took advantage of a San Jose Sharks team that was cap hurt and were able to get a player like Erhoff. Like, I'm not suggesting Erhoff is the difference maker for that 2011 run, but a player like Erhoff on the contract that he was on from a team who ultimately gave him away, that's what you need, and Canucks would need a few of those deals.
Yeah, and just a reminder that if Canucks re-sign JT Miller, every year on that deal, he is over 30. And as we know, 30 is old. And I do think he would perform beyond his 30th birthday, but do I think it's going to be long enough? No.
Forever! It'll be like Gordie Howe playing well into his 70s, I think Gordy played into.
Into his
70s. On a, I mean, on and off. I mean, that he, I think he essentially dressed in every decade to his 70s, I think it was. Mm-hmm. But he played, I mean, the Jaromir Jagr apparently is going to play until he's 100, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I think so.
But he's also like, you know, a Terminator, I think. Yeah.
And he's came also from the future. Not in the NHL.
True. As we wrap up the show, I did want to give out a shout out to Canucks restricted free agent, to Juho Lamikko, for his effort in helping Team Finland beat Team Canada in the International World Cup of Hockey. I honestly had no clue it was even happening.
Did hear that Canada did somewhat poorly, but to their expectations anyway.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, this is the thing is, I think expectations for Hockey Canada is always high, whether or not, like, there are still far too many people who think Canada is like a clear cut number one hockey nation, and therefore everyone else is so far behind. That is not the case in either the men's or the women's game. It is, you know, Canada is still producing probably a bulk of players in both of those games, but when it comes to the international side of things, you know, not the same. And it's not like Canada, and you could say, well, not many of these other teams have their best players, because there are many that are still playing in NHL, and then some who say no. But, you know, Canada always is up tough in these types of competitions. So, I mean, I wasn't really paying a lot attention to it. So,
but good for Lama. We also, since this has happened since our last podcast, but very sad news that Brock Besser's father, Duke Besser, passed away. So, all our love to the Besser family. It's been a really tough couple of years for them. But Duke seemed to be a really big personality. Canucks Nation sends out their love to the Besser family.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned this in C4 Discord, but if you have an opportunity, you know, give your loved ones a hug. Mm-hmm. Just because you should. So here we are at the end of another show. We are into, almost June. I mean, this is the end of May. This episode's going live. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. It's the middle of June. 2 weeks after that, it's free agent frenzy-ish. 2 weeks after that, it's the heat of the summer. 2 weeks after that, we're probably talking about rookie camp. 2 weeks after that, we're probably talking about training camp.
I feel like you missed the draft out there.
Well, the draft will happen between sort of our mid-show and, like, right?
Yeah.
Entry draft occurs in between.
We'll have to we'll figure things out. We might be recording
at
weird times of day.
2 months.
In order to figure that out. But
yeah. This new C4 episode goes live, like, 5 minutes after we record it, 7 a.m. Pacific.
I mean, don't joke about it.
No, I know. I mean, we'll have to figure things out, because you're going to be a full 8 hours away from me for a period of time.
I know, so sad.
But we'll make it work, obviously, to continue producing the show throughout the entire offseason. Unlike, 4 years ago, like it was, that we just took the entire offseason off.
Yeah.
Like, this show shut down. It popped up for a couple episodes. Usually sort of through the playoffs into the free agent frenzy, and then nothing until September. And we haven't done that in a while now. So
no, that would feel
great. We love talking puck.
Yeah.
What final words of wisdom do you have for all of our listeners today there, Anna?
It's kind of interesting, like, just riffing on the fact that we take off season off. Sitting down to think about what we could talk about today, and I just thought, I'm not sure we have a ton to talk about. And then I was writing it down, and we had so much to talk about. So news still is happening, and we haven't even started really covering the draft or too much of free agency or anything. So, you know, there's still storylines going on, and I'm kind of surprised, but it's good for us.
Yep. And let's be honest, if there was too much to talk about over the course of 2 weeks, I mean, we're already at an hour. Could you imagine how long we'd just been talking?
I know.
Yeah. Words of wisdom for me. Puppies bite. I mean, they legitimately do. Like, those
had your tetanus recently?
No. Because we always go off the rails here. In one of my many sort of trips to a hospital over the course of the past couple of years, someone had come in and said they had not received a tetanus shot. Something had hurt, like they got an injury and they wanted a tetanus shot. And the doctor's response was that it's not necessary, because in Canada, it's not an issue. And that was the first time I'd ever heard someone suggest that. And it's not like
shocked if that was the case. I think if any bite draws blood, human or animals, you probably get a tetanus shot if you haven't had one in the last year or year and a half.
Well, I think, you know, again, I'm sitting here listening to this and I'm like, what? I mean, it was a doctor who had said it.
Yeah, but that is not what I have heard from other medical sources.
Well, I came home and Googled it, because where else would I go and question the words of a doctor? Google. And apparently it's like tetanus still is an issue, But due to vaccination rates in Canada, both from a domesticated pet perspective, but also with humans, it is much less an issue as it once was.
Okay,
hence why there isn't.
Get ready for that to change because.
Well, no, I mean,
kinds of stuff coming back.
Well,
they're going to stop vaccinating for that monkeypox.
Well, chickenpox is just still a vaccine. Like you get vaccinated for chickenpox, but smallpox.
Yeah,
I was actually trying to think. I don't think I have a smallpox vaccination because the presumption was that smallpox itself had been eradicated.
Yeah, I don't think I have one either. I don't know what I have, but.
Well, the telltale sign of a smallpox vaccination was often like this sort of like scar. And I have a scar on my arm.
Yeah.
But I think that scar is because I got poked twice.
Oh, I think mine is from. In the UK, like it's known as the BCG vaccine. But that's TB, like the one that creates the scar that people have.
Yeah. So
you can't see
it. I have. Oh. Anna can see it. I have my record. My mother, in the 70s.
I don't know
and,
what mine is.
And it's like old school, like, you know, printed and then handwritten in there. I got the quadruple vaccine, DBTP, for whooping cough, diphtheria, tetanus, and poliomyelitis, or polio. And then I got like a bunch of others.
Yeah, I mean, MMR, I got
MMR once, not twice. Mm.
And then I've had the like meningitis C vaccine. And then I've had, I think, Hep A and Hep B, I think.
Well, I've had one recently, not that recently,
but I was meant to get it as a kid and I didn't get it until I was like 18 and we were going to Thailand and they were like, why don't you have this?
Yeah, I got the Twinrix vaccination, which I think is the brand name of the hepatitis vaccines. I've got the full round of that in more recent times. I've only got one MMR. And I mean, MMR is an interesting one because, I mean, if we think about the hockey connection, mums went through the NHL only a few years ago.
Obviously, much more dangerous for men than women in terms of fertility. Oh, my God.
I can't believe our show has taken this like it's not even a turn.
We like totally jumped the tracks here. We have. I just feel like we didn't do IOTA today, so we're just kind of bringing the IOTA vibes.
Yeah, where we talk about the weird and the crazy. Getting a little bit back on ish track. I mean, ish because of what I'm going to talk about. It's related to the podcast. I've been looking at trying to get an event running this summer. Would be likely in August. And so what Anna and I had kicked around as an idea was like a little golf tournament, but not like in a full-fledged golf course.
Yeah, not like the Jake Milford here. Like,
No. Like the C4 Open would be at like a mini golf or par 3 type course. I have reached out to a number of them, and I cannot get any responses, which is so weird. Like one of them, the Ambleside Golf Course in North Vancouver, on their website talks about, oh, we do tournaments. Reach out to us for details. Well, that's cool and all. I've been reaching out. Please send me details. But if you know of a venue similar to like a par 3, a mini golf type venue or something where we could all have fun, you know, reach out to us. If you have a connection or whatever, someone who might actually, you know, talk to us.
Yeah. And just to be
clear, we want to make this happen.
We do it as a charity thing, so we're not trying to line our pockets here, but we think it would be a fun
event to
bring sort of Canucks Twitter together, C4 community together, and raise a little money and have some fun and laugh at me trying to hit a golf ball.
Well, I mean, I think it was Nexus had asked if I golfed, and I'm like, well, I have two sets of clubs. He's like, let's go golfing. I'm like, okay, just because I own two sets of clubs does not a golfer I get made. Like,
maybe I'll get my brother to take me to the driving range while I'm home. Okay. He took me once and said I wasn't as bad as he thought I was going to be. So, you know, high praise.
That's awesome. At least, so I went to a driving range in Osoyoos and I completely shattered my sister's friend's driver.
I mean, that could be worse. I thought you were going to say someone's windshield.
No, it could have been, but like, you got to consider like these clubs, especially a driver can be worth a lot of money. This one was.
Yikes.
What we presume is the shaft itself probably had like a stress fracture or something. And then my swing, cause I'm just a big guy, has a lot of force.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely you that's going to be blamed in that scenario.
We had to go onto the driving range to chase the driver head that was, you know, that went about 50 yards.
I think that's how I
sent the driver head farther than I did the ball.
That's definitely a penalty.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, if you want to share your thoughts about the C4 Open or Anna and I's, golfing exploits, the best place to do that is C4 Discord. You can join Discord by going to discord.io/C4podcast, or alternatively, if it's just that much easier, reach out to us on Twitter at the C4 Podcast or on Facebook, facebook.com/C4Podcast. The other thing that you can do, you can drop us a text message, leave us a voicemail. The phone number, 604-200-6201, 604-200-6201. Or what's the other way that people can reach us via phone without a phone, Anna?
Speakpipe.com/C4Podcast.
That would be it. I actually logged in. Just in case I hadn't gotten a notification or something to see if someone had sent us something, they had not. And it's been a while since we've gotten a text message or a voicemail,
yeah,
or anything along those lines. So,
like, hey, what you guys sound like. It would be cool to get a voicemail for one of our overseas listeners, for example.
Yeah. And again, if you calling long distance or texting long distance costs money.
That's what
voicelink.fm/C4podcast.
Speakpipe is for.
Or Speakpipe. Yeah, sorry.
Ready made.
Oh, anywho. On behalf of Anna, A4603, myself, Chris, at Lightforce, signing off this episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com with We Out.